is May 7th, 2014. This is episode 413 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. Today's death, H.H. Holmes, who died May 7th, 1896. Son of a violent alcoholic in New Hampshire, Holmes became obsessed with death as a child. Later, as a doctor, he would steal bodies from the morgue, disfigure the bodies, and collect insurance money, claiming they had died in accidents under policies he had taken out. He lived in Chicago during the World's Fair, as dramatized in the book The Devil and the White City, in what was later called the Murder Castle, where he would murder young women, often those who worked for him and whom he'd also taken out insurance policies on, and sold their bodies to medical schools. He left Chicago after the fair and was on the loose for a year before being caught in Boston in 1894. He is estimated to have killed up to 200 people and is generally considered America's first serial killer. He was hanged for his crimes in Philadelphia. His neck did not snap, and he actually died of asphyxiation. He was 34 years old. Here in Athens, though, is merely Wednesday. I'm Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. As a general rule these days, no matter what else is going on, whether it's the NFL draft or the upcoming World Cup or anything else that may be tickling the fancies of America's sports planet, we're going to try to do a baseball show a week, no matter what's going on. And so I'm delighted to have on today Allison Footer. She is a national correspondent for MLB.com. She covered the Houston Astros for years and years, and she's been on the NL Central beat for the last couple of weeks. So she's mostly been watching rain fall. So we're going to have some baseball chat today because, of course, we do. All right, Ms. Footer, first off, thank you for joining me and letting me scratch my weekly baseball itch. I get very antsy. If I had my druthers, I would do every show on baseball. And unfortunately, we pretend that Sports on Earth is about other things sometimes. But thank you for letting me do baseball stuff today.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm always happy to talk about baseball.
I know. Exactly. So this is why it's going to be so fun. So you're, of course, national correspondent now, but how long were you involved with the Astros?
Well, all total, about 15 years. I started off working in media relations for them. That's how I kind of started my baseball career. And then I moved, MLB.com started in 2000, 2001, and I moved over there and covered them as a beat writer for 8 seasons. And then I went back to the Astros to be their social media director, and I did that for 3 years. So that was fun, too. So I guess, you know, I'm not really good at math. That's why I write about baseball, but somewhere around 15 years.
So now it's funny, you know, but you've been associated with MLB.com other than, does that count being the social media coordinator for the Astros? Does that count as being part of MLB.com, or is that an Astros job?
That was an Astros job. Okay. So it was Astros, MLB, Astros. And it was really funny because I just ran into one of the Brewers broadcasters when I was in Cincinnati covering them. And he said, "So are you still doing media relations for the Astros?" Which is really funny because I left that job right. 14 years ago. But since I never left Houston and I kind of was just always around, I mean, I don't expect people to keep up with going, you know, switching jobs back and forth. But so people get confused all the time. They don't really know what I'm doing right now. But that's fine. I like to keep people wondering.
Yeah, it's difficult in the days of social media to keep much mystery anymore. So I respect for keeping everybody guessing in a lot of ways. Are you having? I'm curious. You know, obviously you're so close to that franchise. They've been a point of considerable discussion the last few years. I wrote a piece about Bo Porter a while back that, you know, I was trying to just have more fun with it than necessarily like tear the guy down or anything. But certainly, you know, with the moves they've made in the last a few years, so on. I think wasn't there a Ken Rosenthal interview where they had to actually, Luno actually had to deny that this was like another test season, as if it was like they were shifting as a test pattern for future seasons. How's that experiment going? Are they happy with it? Is it moving in the right direction? Did they want to see more progress by now? Where are they standing?
Well, I think that they're not happy with how much losing they're doing on the major league level. But I think that the expectations were a little unrealistic that they were going to be able to rid the roster completely of major league players a couple of years ago when they started the big purge. That was more for, partly rebuilding, but partly they don't want to spend any kind of money on their payroll. So that's why it was $20 million at the end of 2013, I guess. And so their eyes have always been on the future and actually the distant future. So they've got, you know, as we all know, the top-rated minor league system. They've rebuilt that from scratch. It was around 2015, like when Luno came on, they had made a lot of progress. The Hunter Pence trade that was made before Luno got there, that kind of like, that really helped boost them in the ratings as far as minor league systems go. Mm-hmm. So they were around 16, and then they moved, you know, they just shot right up. So, you know, the problem is that there really wasn't any, on the major league level, there weren't any players. So what they're doing is losing a lot of games, and I don't know how long that's going to last. I mean, I know that Jim Crane is probably pretty anxious to get some results on the field. They say that they really don't want to spend money on the major league level until the fans come back. But the fans aren't coming back until they start winning. So it's sort of that chicken and egg thing. You know, how does this all come together? And what is going to happen is that the minor league system is just going to have to reach the major leagues and be able to create a really strong core of players. And then maybe they'll be able to add some pieces and become a contender. But it's going to be a while.
You know, it's funny because I like the experiment. I like what they've done. I call it an experiment because it's not my team. I can be like, oh, interesting experiment you've got over there. Let me know if it works. Meanwhile, Astros fans are like, we cannot. Bo Porter's losing his mind because he's losing 110 games a year. So it's very easy for me to look from afar and say, hey, good luck with your experiment, your little think tank that you're doing over there when they actually have to do these games. But that's the part that I get nervous about is when you start hearing that idea, like, oh, well, when the fans come back, we'll start spending money, as if the performance on the field and the fans coming back are somehow completely unrelated and so on.
Right.
It seems like they had to have known, particularly with all the TV issues they've been having too, they had to have known that the place was going to be empty for a while and accounted for that. So it seems strange to me now that they would be like, oh, we need to get you guys come back and we'll start spending money. It seems like if they wanted the fans to make this sort of like, okay, bear with us, it's going to take a while, we're going to do this thing, and it's going to pay off, it doesn't really seem fair to be like, hey, where are you guys?
Right, and I don't know that they're really like, you know, saying directly to the fans, like, you have to come back to spend money at our ballpark, but that's the way, I mean, they're not bringing in any money. They're bringing in money, like, as every team is, from the national, like, radio and TV deals. They get a lot of money from MLB Advanced Media. So there are revenues coming in that can fortify just an entire operation. And they kind of have to sort of rely on that right now. The problem is they're also just not getting any rights fees from their TV deal. So they haven't gotten paid since last June on rights fees. So financially, I just, you know, I kind of scratch my head because I look at all of this and I think, well, you know, if you go into the stadium and people aren't buying the hot dogs and people aren't buying the merchandise, the T-shirts, the hats, the tickets, you wonder, you know, what's the final product here? How does this whole thing work out? And that's why I say, you know, you kind of have to look at 5 years from now. But there are definitely issues, and the thing that worries me really more than anything is when you bring up these like hugely talented players that they have drafted and developed and brought through the system, you bring them up to a major league team that really doesn't have the talent or capabilities or abilities at all to compete, and you put George Springer in a vacuum of a lineup, how is that going to translate into him being successful on the major league level? And so these are the things that, you know, kind of bother me when I go around and I travel, and I, you know, I was just in Cincinnati and I covered, you know, the Cubs and the Brewers, and these are two really good teams with really good rotations and really good lineups, and there's a whole kind of rhythm to this thing, and the Astros, I don't know when they're going to find that or how, but you know, you just can't bring up seven prospects and throw them out there. I mean, there has to be some kind of continuity, and there has to be some veteran leadership. There has to be some talent, and that's what just concerns me at this point.
Yeah, it's a little worrisome. You know, we're seeing this with the Cubs a little bit too, but I think it's probably more extreme in this regard. That idea that, like, listen, you have to give us 5 years from now, which I understand. As someone rebuilding, you have to give it time. On the other hand, there's already been three, and then you're pushing like a decade. Like, I know that there's a long timeline, but really, if it's going to take 4 or 5 more years to get in, you're literally talking about 8 years of this. As much as you like the experiment, it does feel like now we're in year – this will be year four where they're, you know, they actually are off to a worse start – like, you know, obviously, it's a small sample size, but their winning percentage right now, as we tape this, is lower than it was the last 3 years. So they could be in route for another 100-loss season. But I guess that's the thing, though. If they're like,
they really can't be waiting around for fans to come back. They have to recognize pretty soon that they have, and I guess we saw that a little bit this year when they did made the Fowler trade and so on, but they don't seem to be any better. I guess is 100 loss season, does it really matter, or do they have to do this in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, I think like avoiding losing 100 losses again is very important, and it sounds really goofy, but if they were to only quote unquote lose 95 games, and that would be like some kind of like 16 game improvement from last year. I mean, they could go 71-91, and that would be a 20 game improvement. I mean, that's how far they have fallen. That you're still talking about having a terrible season and improving by 15 wins, mm-hmm. which is, I looked at what they did. I mean, they're clearly, the move that they made in the offseason said to me, okay, they are actually trying to win some games. And I did not feel that way last year. I felt last year, and I still feel that they purposely put that team out there for a number of reasons, and one is to get, you know, a high standing in the draft and not spend any money. But then I was like, okay, they made the Fowler trade, which I thought was good. They signed some guys to be in the bullpen, and that was like the most important thing. So they signed guys that can get major league outs on a consistent basis in the major leagues. Now, granted, they're not really doing that right now, but you get like a Chad Qualls, you get a Matt Albers, you take a chance on Jesse Crane maybe being able to come back at some point this season. And so I thought, you know, they still don't have, like, a closer, but how important is a closer to this team? Probably not that important. I predicted that they would avoid losing 100 games. And I kind of still feel like they may have a shot of doing that, but they're going to have to start winning a lot of games in order to avoid it. I mean, they're on pace. I think today they're on pace for 51 losses or 51 wins, which is what they had last year. So it's not, you know, you can, like, there's a hardcore fan base here that gets the plan and understands it and still enjoys going to games, but it's such a small sampling. And when you're talking about a city of 4 million people, most of them are not saying, like, ooh, look, all these prospects in the farm system, and hey, this is really cool, all these saber metrics. I mean, these people do not know in that way. They're just casual fans who cannot watch the games on TV.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
They have a lot of problems because people say, well, do they really want to be on TV with how bad they are? I'm like, no. The only thing worse than a mad fan is one that doesn't care anymore. And they need to be on TV so they can be reminded how mad they are that the Astros are bad. And it sounds bizarre,
but it's
all part of marketing and the continuity and keeping the fan base around and reminding them that they still care about this team, even though they're not very good.
And listen, I love baseball as much as I love anything in this world. And I'd have a hard time watching. Like, 111 games will get to you. That's a lot of losses. That's a lot of losses, no matter how much you get the plan. And I don't want to spend too much time on Houston, but yeah, that is the idea. It's like, man, that's just, whew, it's got to be hard to go through that. It's funny that you mentioned earlier, you know, Baseball Prospectus did a thing, I think last year, where they listed the 30 franchises in future talent ranking, in the idea of like looking where they were now and then what their farm system was, and who, if you were a new GM just walking into that situation, which team was most set up for the future. And number 30 on that list was Milwaukee. And so here they are.
Yeah.
And I get it. And I get I understood why. I'm not mocking them for that. I understand why they did that. Their farm system is famously almost gutted out. You had a lot of guys who, you know, if everything fell perfectly, maybe things could fall to a 500 season in a lot of eyes, just because. But there were so many question marks about that. And yet here they are. And having with the best record in baseball, it still seems awfully fluky to me. But you've seen them up close in a way that I haven't. What are they doing, or is it just luck?
Well, for a while it was just really good players doing what they do. But now you have Ryan Braun, who's out, and that's a big one, because this is an oblique issue, and I'm just speculating on this. This is not based on any kind of information that anybody gave me when I was there. But when you have an oblique, just from the experience of covering guys that have oblique strains, those cannot be, you can't come back from that early. You can't push through anything and rehab, you know, extra and come back. It's basically the way it was explained to me by some Astros that were dealing with it like 10 years ago. It's like it's like taking the meat off, like ripping the meat off of a bone. Yeah. And so that's what's happening to your rib cage. And so you cannot do anything, but make sure that you are giving it complete rest to heal and to kind of meld back together, if you will. So, you know, Braun being out for a few days, and then they finally put him on the DL just so he could, you know, get it taken care of, and they're all speaking very optimistically, like that it'll only be the 15 days. And that absolutely might be the case. They certainly know him, and he knows him way better than I know anybody on that roster. But those injuries have to be monitored very, very closely. You cannot come back before it's time, or else it's just going to, 2 weeks later, you're going to be back on. Now, Aramis Ramirez, I mean, he's got two hits in his last 40 at bats, maybe, and those two hits are both solo home runs. And I know that he's probably, you know, he had a little bit of an injury issue that he's not really talking about, but now he's still your cleanup hitter. And so the pitching has been fantastic. I mean, they are so impressive, and their bullpen is great. And they've kept them in these games, but eventually you're going to have to score a few runs, you know, late in the game. And that's what they have not been able to do. And they lost 3 or 4 in Cincinnati by really close games, most of them, because they just didn't have that clutch hit late. And these starters are giving everything they possibly have, and they're doing great. And the bullpen is really, really doing well. But the offense, if they don't find a way to fix that somehow, and there really is not much they can do, then they're just going to come. They'll be in it all year, and they could very well be in the playoffs. But, you know, this next month could be, you might see a little bit of more 500 ball played instead of 733 ball played.
I mean, it seems kind of crazy to me that they've done this so far. And it's funny, there's always that concept. Dave Cameron always talks about the idea of wins in the bank and the idea that, like, sure, even if they're a 500 team moving forward, they're what are they, 10 games over, 12 games over right now? Like, even if they're, even if they're 500 the rest of the way, that's still, like, they're at 86 already. They're at 86, 87 wins already, even if they're 500 the rest of the way. Like, these wins do still count. It's funny, as has been rumored, and I will confirm the rumors, I am, in fact, a Cardinals fan. And I find myself, I don't know if you've heard, I've been trying to keep it on the down low. Found that I find myself, and maybe this is something you've been seeing a lot of the NL Central lately, I still feel like the Brewers aren't the major challenger for the Cardinals. I'll be entirely honest. I have many friends that are Brewers fans that will be annoyed with me and find it just another smug Cardinals fan, which is probably true. To me, I just don't see, as good as that starting pitching is, as nice as the bullpen is, I still feel like Cincinnati and even Pittsburgh, as much as they struggled, are better teams.
Yeah, I mean, I look at Cincinnati's lineup, and that's just kind of a scary lineup. I mean, you got Joey Votto, you got Brandon Phillips. I mean, and it just goes down the lineup. Jay Bruce is out for a little bit, so he could be out for a month. So that's a big blow to them. But they certainly have. And if you put Ryan Braun back in the, you know, if he comes back off the DL on May 9th, like, or May 12th, like he's scheduled to, then you know, maybe that changes the whole look at that lineup. But yeah, I mean, right now when you, well. Yeah, I covered the Astros in 2005 when they had the third worst batting average in the National League, and they won the pennant. So it can be done if your pitching is that good and that unhittable. But I just don't see the Brewers being like the team that everyone's going to be scared of in August. I see that to be, you know, possibly the Cardinals, very likely the Reds. The Pirates can make a push, but I think that the starters might start getting a little burn out if they have to, you know, carry this on their shoulders the entire season. The offense is going to have to do something.
Now, when you look at the teams in baseball, the Astros, the teams with the worst records are basically the Diamondbacks, which to me are just, they're such a nightmare. They're 3.
That's just mind-boggling. I don't,
it's crazy,
even get
right?
That.
It's crazy. Like, they're 3-15 at home. Like, that's just being mean.
That's just almost impossible. Like, you almost accidentally run into a couple wins just by chance when you have a team like that. So, yeah, I don't get that at all.
But and it feels like they have just some soul searching to do. I think, you know, there's been the jokes about, you know, they won a certain type of player, and now that certain type of player is leading them to a 3-14 winning percentage. I mean, they're 11.5 games out. I mean, that's just kind of crazy. You know, it still feels like Arizona's got some issues to resolve, and they're going to have to do a lot of soul searching. But when you look at a team like the Cubs, who are the other worst teams in baseball right now. On one hand, they have the kind of the same issue as Houston in a lot of ways, in that you know, that how patient can you be? When does that well the talent come? On the other hand, they have inherent advantages that Houston does not have, and they do have a lot of this talent coming. In your opinion, in the next 3 or 4 years, are the Cubs, first off, looking at the Cubs this year and looking at the Cubs now, how many of those guys on the team now, like I look at like I'm not sure who the all-star representative for the Cubs is right now, but I feel like there might be 4 in 4 years.
No, that could be. And I have not, I mean, you hear good things about the guys that are coming up, and you definitely, there does seem to be some legitimate hope for them and some names that could resurface. I mean, obviously, Jeff DeMarcia is probably an all-star. They kind of play to their records. I always saw them. One of the games was rained out, so I should say I only really watched them, two games a person, but I do watch plenty of their games on TV, and it does seem like it's a lot of just disjointed parts and nobody that's really, like, separating himself from the pack. But, the Samardzija thing is just, I think, very telling about what happens when you have a bad baseball team, and it's not your team can't score runs when you start. They can't really score runs ever. But there might be a mental thing to that too. Like, oh my God, our ace is pitching, and we're gonna roll over again. I just don't see a lot of continuity to their lineup. The bullpen is what it is, and but I do think that in 4 years, I think that they have a better chance than the Astros in a few years to actually be what people are saying they may be.
Do you, how often are you on the, are you in Houston most of the time? Are you running, were you just filling in this week? How often are you on the road, or do they keep you there most of the time?
It's kind of sporadic. Like, I'm on the road a lot in April and May, because we have some special project that we do, and I kind of go around, and we have these awards, these Gibby Awards, these mm-hmm. Greatness in Baseball Yearly Awards, and so we do a lot of presentations with the teams in person, and I go around, and I call myself the Vanna White of the Gibbies. So that keeps me on the road for the first, 2 months, and it's really fun, and then it gives me an ability to get out there and, write feature stories on some of these guys. And then once June comes around, it kind of settles in a little bit, and I do a lot of work out of Houston. So it just depends on what time of year it is.
So, I'm a bit obsessed with ballparks. I just generally, I think I've got 8 more to go. I'm curious, of the 30 that are going right now, how many have you been to?
Of the modern ones, right now?
The ones we're currently using, yes.
Yeah, I think I've been to all of them except Toronto.
Toronto?
Oh, I'm sorry, I haven't been to the new Minnesota, but I'll get that done at the All-Star.
Yeah,
so,
I'm knocking that off at the All-Star game as well. I'll try to keep the noise down so you can work. But I'm curious. What's your favorite? Is there one that you're like, all right, I can't wait to go there? Any answer is acceptable here. If it's like, listen, I love Wrigley, but the press box, I can't move and I can't write anything. Or as far as I'm concerned, I have the best press area in Tampa, so that's my favorite stadium. I'm curious. What's the one? I thought that's true, but I'm curious. What's the stadium that you get most excited to go to? And then maybe what's the one that you dread going to the most?
Well, my favorite ballpark is in San Francisco. So AT&T Park is top rate. It's beautiful. It's on the bay. You can't be putting it on water. The press box is actually a little bit cramped, but it's the best city. It's the best ballpark. It's the best atmosphere. I absolutely love just being there. Pittsburgh is my second favorite. I love going to Pittsburgh for baseball, and I know that I've done it so many times over the years that I have a soft spot because there's a familiarity there. But that ballpark is amazing. That is the statues that they have outside of Roberto Clemente, mm-hmm. Willie Stargell. I mean, they have such an amazing history, and I'm fascinated by their history, and they do such a good job of having that history represented. And the ballpark is absolutely gorgeous. And the scene beyond the outfield and the Clemente Bridge and all the – it's just – it's spectacular. So
were you there for the playoff games? I didn't go. And I just it sounded like – it was like a football soccer crowd in there. It was awesome.
Well, yeah, for that
wild card.
Yeah, I was there. And it was funny because I had – my assignment was actually to go out and I was on the social media side for that game to go out and find fans that had their faces painted and doing crazy stuff and crazy signs, and I could not find really anything like that. People were just wearing black and gold. There was not a single fan not wearing black and gold. And there was no, they were so into it and so serious about it. And there really wasn't any like goofy craziness going on. And I was on the field for the intros, so the, for it, to introduce the lineup. And I felt, I mean, I have been doing this for 17 years. I have been in some loud stadiums. That's the loudest I've ever heard ever in my life. That, I mean, it just, I felt like the place was going to come crashing down on my head. It was so loud. And it was the best atmosphere that I've ever seen at any baseball game ever. It was, I'm so glad that I was there for that. Even if I never cover another playoff game, that was the best one.
All right, so where do you, you can tell me, no one's listening. It's a secret between you and I. What's the stadium that you don't like? What's the one you're like, and of course you're at a baseball game. So like, don't get the idea that I'm like setting you up to be like, oh, baseball reporter complaining about their job. Like no matter what, it's cool that you're at a baseball game. There's no question about that. But like, I'm curious, like if there's a stadium you're like, all right, this one needs some work or this one is now one of my favorites. I'm curious, which one's those?
You know, God, now I have to think because so many of them, I mean, they're all new now. They're all, like, within the last 15 years. You know, I mean, it's the Angel Stadium is, you know, and those guys are fantastic in PR, and I don't want to remotely, like, bash the organization or the team. But
I gave you cover. You're fine. You're fine.
They moved the press box.
Talk about how they're monsters.
It's like a tiny little box that's now down the right field line and you can't even really see home plate, and so it's just and I've only been there a couple times, so it's an uncomfortable place for the reporters to work. It's still like a really good stadium. I, to be honest with you, and I know this is blasphemous, I don't like working out of Dodger Stadium. I really appreciate every bit of that ballpark, but to actually work out of there is kind of a gigantic pain from start to finish. And it's just because, you know, you come in kind of on the ninth level and you can't really get the elevator to come and get you. And then trying to get down to the clubhouse, you're fighting, fans to try to get down, and you have only a very small window of time to get down there in time after a game. And so logistically, it's actually like a really inconvenient place to work, but it's obviously a great place to watch ball games.
My journalist.
And I love Wrigley Field. I have, you know, Wrigley Field is close to my heart. I don't care how much of a pain it is to cover games there. And yes, it is. It's a big, gigantic pain. But I love every second that I'm there. I can smell the place, you know, with the squished hot dog buns on the ground and all the stale beer. And on a Saturday afternoon when it's 72 degrees and people are getting crazy, there's no better place to be in baseball.
Yeah, my favorite thing about Dodger Stadium, I've never sat in the press box at Dodger Stadium, but every time I go there, I'm always in a rental car. And I always park in that because I don't live in Los Angeles. It would be weird. And I always park out there. But I'm really bad because I didn't have a car I have a car now, but I didn't have a car for 14 years because I lived in New York. So I always forget what my rental car looks like. Just forget the basic things you're supposed to do when you're in like a big parking city and you have a rental car. So three times I've been to Dodger Stadium, I've spent at least an hour and a half after the game walking around like an idiot, clicking my thing, going, one of these has got to be my car. One of these every single time. So, because I'm not used to that kind of massive parking experience.
No, and I get lost trying to just get to the stadium entrance because you get in the vicinity of Dodger Stadium, but you're not quite there, and then you have to know, like, a GPS can't quite get you up to the entrance that you need to. And so, yeah, there's always just a little bit of anxiety that's attached to the whole Dodger Stadium experience. I'm totally fine once I'm in, though.
So you've just got Toronto and Minnesota to go.
Believe so. I think that's it.
I hit Toronto a couple years ago. I sat behind the guy from Rush. Which just seemed was such a Canadian, such a Canadian cliche. Like, I assume that, like, now just if you go to any sporting event in Canada, there'll be a guy from Rush there. I just assume that's just the way it works. All right. Well. Listen. Okay. My last question for you. My last baseball related question for you, and then you can go about your merry way. I'm curious. First of all, actually, it's a second question. Have you given away all the Gibby stuff now? Are you done? How much more do you got to go?
No, I just started.
You got plenty.
Detroit was my first stop, and Miguel Cabrera, who got two Gibbies last year, too, so he kind of knows the drill, and he's really fun about it. And I know I'm going to Anaheim and L.A. Next week, so I'm going to hit both of those cities, and then I'm going to San Francisco in early June. So, yeah, we're still rolling with these. So it's just the season has still begun.
So how many do you have to give out?
Well, I think, I mean, I got like, I have like six teams, and then we have a couple of other people that are able to hit some of the other teams. You know, we don't do presentations for like every single Gibby category, right. Like, you know, kooky play of the year or whatever. I mean, we're not going to do that. But,
best kiss.
You know, for
MVP, best kiss being the best Gibby category.
Yeah, I mean, we like to have, you know, these kind of off-the-wall categories too. And it's really cool because it's the only awards where you also, there are also postseason awards included. And guys, you know, performances just in October. And then the awards are like really nice. They're really heavy. I remember Cabrera was a little caught off guard last year when I handed it to him because they're like, you know, 12 pounds. So I had to warn him, like, now just remember, you know, these are really heavy. These are a lot heavier than they look. So, but it's fun. And the voters are like reporters and Sabre people and fans and front office members. And, you know, it's pretty all-inclusive. And it's a great initiative for MLB.com. So it's really fun to go around and travel and give these people their awards.
All right. Well, you know, as you know, the Sports Center at the office is in the MLB Advanced Media offices in Chelsea. The next time I'm there, and I'm not there very often, but the next time I'm there, I'm going to steal a Gibby.
Well, just seriously, ask them to hold a Gibby because it's an experience. I mean, it's a workout. It really is a workout.
I'm pretty jacked. No, I'm totally not jacked. I'm totally not jacked. I'm actually intimidated just the thought of it. All right, Allison, thank you so much for coming on with me. I'm a big fan of everything you're doing, and I was very happy to get to talk baseball with you. And if you would do me the honor, I would love to have you on again.
Absolutely, anytime. This is great. Thank you.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, but no, I meant by have you on again, we're going to do the exact same show with the exact same questions again right now. that was a first take, and you did great. That was a wonderful dress rehearsal for the podcast. Now we're going to do the real one. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, say it all over again.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time. I'm sure we'll chat soon.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you to Allison Footer. She was very great. You can follow her on Twitter, at Allison Footer, AllisonFootER. Make sure you get the Y in there. My father's name is Brian, Bryan, and if you try to spell it with an I, he will stab you and everyone that you care about. All right, this has been the Willie's Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Thursday's guest, the last show of the week. You know, I did my best, but I could not get away with not doing an NFL draft podcast. I know, I'm sorry. I know all you need right now is someone else bloviating about the NFL draft. Fortunately, I will not be doing much bloviating because I don't know anything about it because it's just a bunch of dudes, fat dudes in their underwear as people talk about their makeup. Their makeup, of course. You know what I mean. Anyway, so, but the one person that does know this stuff and is the one of the few people that you can actually, you know, pay attention to and knows what they're talking about and is worth listening to it is our own Mike Tanier. He is the NFL writer for Sports on Earth and pretty much the main, you know, we are, the rest of us at SOE are all just kind of in his shadow a lot of ways, particularly this time of year. So in the midst of, I assuming he has, he's one of the NFL reporters, I assume, have like 8 cell phones on their person at all time. So I'm sure while I am doing an interview with him, he will have Greg Aiello on one phone and, you know, some draft Nick on the other and Johnny Manziel's agent and just, you know, a couple extras from draft day. He's giving me 20 or 25 minutes of his time on a very, very busy day. So we're going to have him on Thursday's podcast. That'll be fun. Anyway, thanks for hanging in with me, and I will chat with you and him tomorrow.